I'd like to call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order at 6:37. Today is Wednesday, the 14th of March. Members present thus far are Representative Birch, Representative Parrish, Representative Lincoln, our vice chair, and myself, co-chair Josephson. Others will come in shortly, I believe. We do not yet have a quorum. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Deborah Tillinghast. Our LIO moderator is Doug Bridges. Is that right?
Yes.
I remind members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. We have two bills to hear this evening. Because we've got many people signed up for public testimony regarding House Bill 272, and so far it's actually not as many as I thought, we'll begin with that, and then we'll take up 330. Okay. We heard the committee's introduction to the Tangle Lakes bill, House Bill 272, last week. It was brief. Before we hear any public testimony, do members have any questions at this juncture about House Bill 272? I don't see any, so I'm going to open up testimony, and we're going to start with invited testimony. And the committee had, the committee chair at any rate, had indicated two people would be invited testimony, and I see them online. We also appear to have Melanie Worden of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys out of Fairbanks. She says she wants to testify, and we'll ask her about that because it may be she's available for questions. That's not correct. Okay, so we will start with the Alaska Miners Association. We have Alicia Sierra. Ms. Sierra, are you on the phone?
I am, thank you.
And did I say your last name correctly?
You did.
Okay. Just give us your name, your affiliation, and we look forward to your testimony.
Thank you very much. Chair Josephson and Tarr, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alicia Sierra. I am Deputy Director of the Alaska Miners Association, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Just to start really quickly, I wanted to let you all know that my boss, DeAntha, was invited to testify on this bill last week and has been available for all of the hearings until tonight was delayed, and she simply could not make it. So tonight I will be delivering her testimony on her behalf. I will warn you that I am unsure if I will be able to answer any very specific questions that you may have, but I will certainly pass that any questions along to her, and we'll get them emailed to you first thing tomorrow morning. But I would like to deliver her testimony. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We oppose the establishment of the Tangle Lake State Game Refuge because it eliminates economic opportunity on the idea that mining is incompatible with public use and habitat, which, of course, our history has proven to be completely false. The sponsor statement for HB 272 states, although most activities within the proposed refuge pertain to renewable resources, there is a potential for non-renewable activities, which could irreparably damage both the ecosystem and the wildlife that depends on it. We disagree on this. A century of experience shows this premise that one must choose between renewable and non-renewable resources to be false. Alaska's economy is built on the premise that Alaskans need not choose between environmental protection and economic development. It's a philosophy that renewable and non-renewable resources cannot occur together in a region, which this bill is predicated upon, would be a death knell to our economy and state revenues. The Denali Highway region around the proposed refuge has seen mineral activity since the turn of the century. The Large Valdez Creek mine, which is just east of the Susitna River, was discovered in the early part of this century and reclaimed in the early 1990s. Modern exploration increased around that same time, and for over 20 years, several different companies have explored the proposed refuge area on lands to the north where access would be impeded by the creation of the refuge. Since 2000, DNR has granted approximately 20 exploration permits and the same number of permits for placer mining in the region. While most are outside the proposed refuge area, a number have included work within the refuge area as well. The region's history shows that nearby large mines such as Valdez Creek Mine have not created the long-term impact asserted by the sponsor, and years of recent exploration have avoided the predicted impacts. This exploration work has included most of the techniques used to find hard rock minerals, including field mapping, aerial and ground geophysical exploration, soil samples, water samples, rock sampling, and exploration drilling. Almost all of the recent exploration has been helicopter supported, leaving little ground disturbance or long-term visual effects. As you know, the designation of a Tangle Lakes Game Refuge is not a new idea. When it was proposed previously, and with exploration activity underway, DNR field personnel were questioned and stated that very few people using either the Tangle Lakes or the Delta Wild and Scenic River even knew that mineral exploration had been occurring. Here it's worth pointing out that the area under discussion already benefits from a system of protection through DNR's special use area designation. Most of the proposed refuge area is within DNR's Tangle Lakes Archaeological District special use area, which was enacted in 2003. Special use area rules are in place in regulation at 11 AAC 96.104B24. When DNR enacted that regulation, it asserted the area and concluded that mining and mineral exploration impacts were easily controlled through mining's extensive permitting and inspection process, though they enacted leasehold location order 26 to put companies on notice that DNR would be looking closely to protect the cultural resources of that area. The agency concluded that unrestricted motorized recreation had the greatest potential to cause significant impact to the natural ecology, as well as impact to cultural and heritage sites in the area. So for that reason, DNR enacted rules to manage that recreation, which is already a vehicle for additional special rules should they become necessary. DNR's land use plan, which was written with the help and endorsement of the Department of Fish and Game, indicates that the vast majority of the refuge has only moderate habitat. The proposed refuge is split between two DNR area plans: Tanana Basin Area Plan Subunit 5C2 and Copper River Basin Area Plan Subunit 28. The Department of Fish and Game provides the fish and wildlife expertise for these plans. As part of these plans, the agency rated habitat in each area into one of five categories. As part of the plan's public process, the habitat ratings were published for public comment. The plan concluded that the vast majority of what is proposed for the refuge is in the middle habitat category, which the plan terms prime habitat. In addition, in 2011, the BLM analyzed a modern mining scenario in an environmental assessment for the Delta Wild and Scenic River. It concluded, and I quote, "If exploration leads to the discovery of an economically viable deposit, the deposit will likely be developed only through underground mining, not open pit, techniques. So, if a mine could be developed in a similar manner as the Pogo mine, which is about 38 miles northeast of Delta Junction, surface disturbance would vary depending on mine designation, construction of roads, power line corridors, selection of tailing disposal method, and other factors. The Pogo mine has a permitted disturbance of 425 acres, end quote. So 425 acres is roughly 0.3% of the proposed refuge's area. This modern mining scenario hardly makes the case that Alaska must choose between habitat and our jobs or income. If it is not closed, the proposed refuge and surrounding area is likely to be explored again. The region is known to be a highly mineralized area in the Nikolai Greenstone geologic terrain that is host to the incredibly rich Kennecott copper deposits. Most recently, a company called Pure Nickel has explored the area, both within the refuge and in the area to the north, in an area where designation of a refuge would discourage additional exploration. I understand that this committee has a letter on the record from the company Pure Nickel stating that it chose to drop its claims in 2013 due to the global mineral investment climate, not for lack of mineralization. Pure Nickel and others' exploration activities showed significant potential of nickel, platinum metals, and elements and other minerals. These minerals are included in a recently published list by the United States Geological Survey of minerals that are critical to national defense and the economy. A secure supply of domestic sources of minerals is a priority for the United States, and it should be for Alaska as well. While exploring our state and the area, the Pierre Nickel camp employed up to 40 people, many of whom were Alaskans, and spent more than $25 million in the state. In just 1 year, it spent $400,000 in claim fees, in which a large portion went to the permanent fund. Closing this area to mineral entry would ensure no further economic benefits from exploration and eliminate the possibility of a producing operation and jobs and revenues associated with a mine. It is proven that Alaska does not have to make the choice between the environmental and environment and resource development. Alaska's miners strongly oppose the proposed refuge. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Sirik. I have a couple questions for you, but I'll ask the committee, which is still coming together. So I don't see any hands yet, so I'll ask a couple. You said
that... I will do my best to answer.
Sure. You said that the area to the north, and a map I have from DNR that I've distributed to the committee shows vastly more, I mean, at least vastly more occurrences. And I confess I'm not an expert on what that word means geologically. But to the extent that word has significance, it shows that the area north of the proposed border is vastly more replete with occurrences than the proposed area. And you said that the area to the north would be, that mining would be discouraged if there were a refuge. Can you explain why that's so? That is, I think your testimony was the area outside the refuge to the north would be discouraged if the area in the refuge was a refuge.
You know, I believe that what was meant in that particular part of the testimony was that mining activity and exploration activity would be discouraged in general. When a company goes in and does exploration, they're not always sure where the deposit is coming from and where it's going. And so to have a portion closed off that may be a significant portion of the deposit would discourage exploration and development.
Okay. And you mentioned a letter from Pure Nickel, and I have that letter. And if the committee for some reason doesn't have it, I can make sure they get it. It's dated March 6th, and it says that the author, Mr. McPherson, who's the president of Pure Nickel, mm-hmm. said that the area is such that it could be restaked. I'll just read the sentence. We are very frequently contacted by companies who wish to purchase the information we developed so that they can restake the claims and continue exploration in the area. Now, it may be true that this bill would make it more difficult to continue exploration in the area, but the bill would expressly allow the restaking of the claims. Can you tell me if you agree with that?
I am unsure on the specifics on that one. I would need to get with the ANSA and email you on that.
Okay.
That would be okay.
All right. And
I have not seen that letter personally.
Okay. And I guess on the subject of compatibility, which you spoke of broadly, there are obviously situations where things are, as a policy matter, we've decided something is incompatible because we've set aside conservation system units that reflect that. Haven't we done that? So for example, Denali National Park. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some level, we've made policy calls that not everything is compatible. Isn't that fair? Or that we...
Yeah,
we,
it is.
Okay. And let me just check the... the bill at page 7, line 21 says, except for valid rights and interests in mineral claims existing next January 1st, 2019, including the right of access to those claims, the land and water areas would be closed to mineral entry. So... It seems like Pure Nickel's concern about restaking the claims is alleviated at some level by that language. Any questions for Ms. Sira?
Yeah.
Yes, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony this evening and for holding over with the delayed and you know, the revised time schedule here. There's some very prejudicial language in the sponsor statement, which includes language such as irreparable damage, it talks about a lot of damage. Typically, in a mining operation, is there not a requirement for bonding restoration? I mean, I think of the work Usabelli was doing, you know, 50 years ago, reclaiming and seed, you know, grass, you know, spreading, you know, seeding and everything else. I think it's when I see a statement that says irreparably damaged, it's pretty harsh. And I like to think that our Department of Natural Resources and the mechanisms that we have in place today protect the public, protect the property, and protect the state interest in these lands. Can you speak briefly to that, or do you have
Certainly.
Any perspective through the chair?
Thank you, Representative. The state of Alaska has a very robust and thorough permitting system for mining operations and potential mining operations in the state of Alaska that include reclamation, bonding, years and years and years of permitting and exploration and the opportunity for public comment and testimony as well, so that we can ensure that our resources can be developed in conjunction with keeping the environment safe.
Yeah, my sense as well. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. It's Andy Josephson again. I guess the only other question I had was about your comment about the habitat being moderate, and I've done some work to try and figure out these terms to see what they mean. We may ask at some point Mr. Meehan of the Department of Fish and Game to talk about this, because he has he's one of the officials there that has been helpful to me, at any rate, to understand this. But it appears that, and it's hard to, for the committee's information, it's hard to determine this because we're trying to find a map that uses these fairly now aged management plans, one 1986 and I think one more recently, that Monsieur referred to. But I think there's some suggestion that other terms have been used by DNR, like high value and prime habitat. Have you seen those terms used, Ms. Sarah, high value and prime habitat?
I have not, but I can certainly ask Bianca about that.
Okay. All right. I don't see any other questions. Ms. Sarah, I do appreciate it, and I share in thanks that Representative Birch offered you. We've been on the floor for extended sessions, and so that bled into our hearing time. So now I'm going to go to Ruth McHenry. And Ms. McHenry, are you there?
I am here. Thank you. Co-chairs Tarr and Josephson and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to testify on HB 272 today. My name is Ruth McHenry. I live at Kenny Lake in the Copper River Basin. I'm speaking on behalf of Copper Country Alliance, but also for myself. I first saw the Tangle Lakes and Eastern Denali Highway region in about 1960, shortly after the highway opened, on a Haines Girl Scout trip around the newly admitted state. I returned with my grandparents a couple years later, and my grandfather shot a caribou for our family. After moving to the Copper River Basin in 1988, I enjoyed joining my late husband on some of his hunts. Sometimes there was a caribou to help skin and pack out, sometimes there wasn't. Either way, it was a glorious place to be. It still is. My present husband and I visit several times a year to hike, to pick berries, and to enjoy that vast open landscape. The Nelchina caribou herd is, for many Copper Basin residents, and for many more from Anchorage, the Mat Valley, Delta, and Fairbanks, a very important meat source. Groceries are expensive in Alaska, more so in rural areas. It is a relief to have one in the freezer. Hunting is the biggest draw for the largest number of Alaskans. Over 17,000 permits this season and the last one. But through the summer, so is recreation and tourism. Small Alaskan-owned tours and large daily princess tours show tourists this scenic alpine region, one of the few drive-through alpine zones in the state. All this provides income for local lodges, gas stations, and other services. Last week, you heard of the importance of outdoor recreation to local business. Many Otna Native families depend on the Nelchina herd. 10,000 years ago, Native Alaskans hunted this same area. They left behind such a dense number of stone tools that the Tangle Lakes Archaeological District was created to help to protect artifacts. The district does not, however, protect the herd or other wildlife. A refuge will protect habitat and wildlife, and therefore, it will protect hunting and trapping. This area is so important that it deserves refuge status regardless of the threat of mining. I especially refer you to longtime ADF&G biologist Robert Tobey's memo about caribou, moose, ptarmigan, fur bears, and waterfowl. The larger part of the proposed refuge, larger by far, is in Unit 5C of the Panama Basin Area Plan. To quote directly from that section, fish and wildlife habitat is designated a primary use in this unit. Values include prime rated habitat for moose, caribou, grizzly bears, and sheep, unquote. What is prime habitat? To quote, prime habitats are those capable of supporting maximum densities of one or more species groups on a long-term basis and are necessary for perpetuation of those populations, unquote. The Tanana Basin Plan does not use the term moderate with regard to these lands. It says that C1 lands are moderate, but these are B1 lands for the most part. No C1 moderate plans at all. Of recreation, the plan states, recreation is designated a primary use. High scenic values at the southern tip of Unit 5C should be protected, unquote. Those high scenic value lands are exactly the ones along the north side of the Denali Highway in the proposed refuge. These two plans were signed off on by the commissioners of the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Fish and Game. How important is it to retain wildlife habitat? You probably know that caribou the caribou move around a lot. Biologists tell us that caribou use different parts of their ranges in different years and different times of year, depending on factors like snow depth and how recently they have fed on plants. So caribou need a lot of habitat. Biologists say that habitats are lost in pieces. They don't know what the threshold before losing a population is, but there is one. It is death by a thousand cuts. A mine here would be a significant cut. Cuts in other parts of the herd's range include current mining and exploration with the possibility of future mining. The twice proposed Susitna Dam has concerned biologists. Military exercises bring low-flying military jets and sonic booms. And much as I love traveling our highways, I recognize that highways fragment the herd's habitat. I have been paying attention to mineral exploration activity around Tangles for 17 years. Modern hard rock mining unavoidably alters land on a large scale, especially if it is open pit, but even if it is underground. Pure Nickel told us they were uncertain which it might be. Either form of mining requires massive waste and tailing storage, mill buildings, power lines, roads. Would tourists come to see a mine rather than what we have here now? Imagine adding ore trucks to the Denali Highway tourist and road hunting traffic, and on the Richardson to daily big tanker truck traffic. Rock Creek Mine near Nome was permitted under the state's so-called rigorous permitting process, and yet it had to shut down after just 2 months because of water problems and never reopened. Helicopter-assisted mineral exploration may leave no long-term impacts, and yet the purpose of exploration is to find a mine. And mines do unavoidably have very long-term impacts. Some even require perpetual, forever treatment. The Alaska Department of Natural Resources permitted exploration in the Tangle Lakes region. Why would it permit exploration if it were not going to permit future mining? You should ask DNR whether it has ever refused a hard rock mine permit. As to whether there are economically viable mineral deposits in the Tangle Lakes region, I would point out that most of the exploration was done north of the proposed refuge. 11 holes in the proposed refuge, 45 holes to the north. 11 versus 45. Pure Nickel, a foreign junior exploration company, eventually relinquished its claim within the proposed refuge and continued to drill those to the north before relinquishing them too. Three major foreign mining companies were recently involved in Tangle exploration. They pulled out. Today, there are no hard rock claims in the proposed refuge or the explored area just north of its boundaries. No hard rock claims at all. It is time to give ADF&G co-management of this important region. We who care deeply about the long-term health of the Tangle Lakes region are hunters, fishers, berry pickers, photographers, paddlers. We are Alaskans who want today's children and grandchildren and all future generations to be able to use and enjoy this area as it is now. We are not a bunch of so-called rabid outside environmentalists. We are not a front for some outside organization. We are not like the mining companies who have used this area based in Toronto or London or China. We are here for the long term. We are immensely grateful to Representative Josephson for introducing HB 272 and to you for hearing it. We urge you to pass it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. McHenry. I want to acknowledge that about 20 minutes ago, Representative Tarr, Johnson, and Drummond joined us. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your testimony. I would note that you are, I guess I'm a little farther in Anchorage. We're about 250 miles away from this property, and Kenny Lake is about 100 miles, so you are a little closer. But One of the things that concerns me, and I'm not a fan of this proposal. I don't support it at all. But one of the things that concerns me is the lack of engagement. We talk about being here for the long haul. Well, one of the folks that I think is here for the long haul is Otten Incorporated, and we have a letter objecting, expressed opposition to this bill from Otten, and they've indicated that they see some very serious and have some very serious concerns with this proposal because it doesn't permit a kind of a shared multiple use opportunity there. So we also have a letter of objection from the Copper Valley Chamber of Commerce. I think that the issue and you know certainly the tourism has merit, but wouldn't you think there's some merit to jobs potentially in the resource extraction business? I mean, I when I think of my grandkids growing up, I'm thinking, you know, I'd just soon have them driving a piece of equipment as you know changing somebody's bed linen. I mean, I think that you know not that there's anything wrong with all those jobs, but I think there's some great opportunities, and I think we really curtail that if we shut those opportunities down. And you have a perspective on the other entity that wasn't involved is the Mat-Su Borough, which touches the western extent of this reserve, and we have no indication that they were even consulted. And I certainly have a concern when we have pushback from the regional corporation that is involved in this area and the government entity, the Mat-Su Borough, in this area. And I'm very concerned about this proposal, but would appreciate your thoughts and perspective on why we can't all get along here. Through the chair.
Yes, and let me just correct that. I've looked very carefully, and Otna doesn't have land in this area. And it doesn't have it may have it's conceivable that
is it not within their regional boundaries?
No, it's not.
Okay.
And its gas interests are far removed from it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's close to Otna relative to Utqiagvik or Nome, mm-hmm. but beyond that, it is not in the area.
It's as close as Tangle Lake says, it's as close as Kenny Lake or Anchorage, I would submit, or closer.
Well, Birch, why don't you respond to the many questions you received and comments, or comment from Representative Birch.
This is Ruth McHenry again. Yeah, I have seen Otna's recent letter. It's very perplexing why it's a complete turnaround from a 2007 supportive letter, which I hope has also been shared with you. The letter that I saw, the recent letter, contains some indicated that Otna misunderstood what was happening. It referred to this being a park. This is not a park proposal. As to jobs, there's always a question of, well, who will get them, how many will there be, and will the people here now, locally, who could use those jobs actually be trained for them or not. But beyond that, we have all these people who do now use this resource. I just think that is much more important both culturally and in terms of the number of people affected. Meat in the freezer is part of our economy.
Thank you.
Ms. McHenry, Representative Birch talked about job-changing bed linen, and I will concede that they don't pay what a mining job pays. I don't think any of us need to investigate that. But when we introduced this bill last week, we paired it with extensive testimony about the value, the economic value of outdoor recreation. Do you have any sense of having lived in this area for this long, what the economic value of the region is to its present uses?
People, as I said, travel through here bringing customers for any number of businesses, but you should be at the hub, the major gas station in Glen Allen, between Memorial Day and Labor Day. It's pretty well jammed. People are also employed by Alyeska. There's a number of other jobs, but it's hard for me to give a kind of quantitative answer for you.
Okay. Ms. McHenry, we have a question from Representative Parrish for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the Chair, Ms. McHenry, thank you for your testimony. You said at the beginning that you belong to the Copper County Alliance and are speaking on their behalf. Have you received explicit permission from their board, and how many people does the Copper County Alliance consist of?
It is Copper Country Alliance.
Pardon?
Our board is 7 members, and they are fully supportive, all of them, of our going forward to support this HB 272.
Representative Parrish, follow-up.
Thank you. Apart from the board members, how many others are there, say, who've decided to subscribe to your mailing list or who come to your meetings?
We have, remember, this is a sparsely populated area. We have on the order of 50 members.
One last follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
Are those 50 primarily in the region in question?
They are. And as well, way back, primarily around 2010 or 11 or 12, we gathered signatures. We and our allies gathered signatures for a letter to the legislature. I've sent all of you copies of those letters. There were a number of a lot of people in our area who signed on who are not our members. You can go there also and see who signed from even Juneau. I hope you will.
Thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. McHenry, for your testimony. I apologize. I walked in and your testimony was well underway, but while I was listening to you, I found what I think is your letter to the legislature, and your name is number 687 on the list of 823 signers. What is the name of the organization that gathered these signatures?
There were several. We were coalesced into a loose organization called Save Tangled Lakes.
Okay, thank you very much. It's I'm very impressed with the range of signers and from the many communities that they come from. And there are plenty of signers from the Copper Valley area, the Valdez to Delta Corridor. It's in our packets, folks. Thank you, ma'am, very much for your testimony.
I just wanted to correct a factual misrepresentation by the co-chair. Virtually the entire Denali Highway is in the Otna region, and about half of the area in question here, that in the eastern extreme, is actually in the Otna region as well. So, to correct the record.
Well, Reverend Birch. I've looked at this myself, and Otna Land is south toward the coast and toward the Wrangell-St. Elias. I'd be happy to look at this. To the south of the highway is more public land. We can look at this. Clearly, there's one answer. It may be that there's a historic region there.
Regional boundary.
Well, no land. Well, okay. The entire state is taken up by 13 or really 12 regional boundaries.
Correct.
So, by your reckoning, there's no public land. It's all regional land.
No, I'm talking about the influence area, the where you would expect to have some consideration and engagement, and you might, you know, drop them a letter and let them know what's going on. That's all I'm talking about.
I think I don't need to research this anymore. Thank you. Any other questions, Representative Johnson?
Well, I don't want to, you know, I think it's important that we do at least identify what we're talking about. And because I was looking at the same thing, and because I'm very familiar with that area, and it is Otna Land, and that's the region. So right, it's actually the boundary. Looks like it's the boundary of the regional lands in a lot of places.
So it's your position that that land is owned by the Otna Native Corporation?
Well, let me put it this way. Let's say my position is that there is land status in the Otna region that we should be considering. And I mean, if this is a huge block of land in their region, of course we should be talking to them. Do they personally own it? No. The corporation owns various lands, I'm sure, here and there, but
okay.
I don't even know what that question is all about exactly, or what we're trying to get to. I think all we're trying to do here is establish what corporation, Native Corporation region is this area in and how it may impact them.
Okay. My home in Midtown Anchorage is in the Cook Inlet region. Okay. But I think I own it, to be simple. It has a mortgage on it, so I guess I'm just puzzled. I don't understand the argument. Representative Birch.
Well, I can help you out a little bit here. There's a chunk of this land you're looking to set aside here that's in the Matsu Borough. And, you know, it would not be unreasonable, in my view, to consult the Matsu Borough. Maybe they don't own it, but their jurisdiction, they have they have a political boundary that includes part of this land. I think it's irresponsible not to contact them in an ownership capacity at some point. I mean, that's all I'm reaching.
Representative Pearson, then we're going to continue with the testimony.
I would like to say one thing. Public testimony.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say one other thing is that we are when the feds overstep in Alaska,
we're up. Questions for Ms. McHenry. All right, then we will go to and just so the members know, Melanie Worden of Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys is online and apparently available for questions. Marliana Hall of RDC is available for questions, although that could be incorrect. She may want to testify, and she's certainly welcome to. But we're going to go to Linda Rutledge of Kenny Lake.
Rutledge. My family?
Yes. Ms. Rutledge?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Give us your name and any affiliation, and we welcome your testimony.
Yes, my name is Linda Rutledge, and I am testifying for myself as a Alaskan person and my family.
Proceed.
Okay, thank you. My family is Charlie and Linda Rutledge and our children, now grown. We began our own homestead in 1979 in Kenny Lake on mile 3 of the Edgerton Highway. We have large subsistence gardens, growing and preserving our vegetables, potatoes, and fruit. The Nelchina caribou herd has been our source of meat for 38 years. The respect and love we hold for this here herd is immense. Certain areas along the Denali Highway are of great importance to the Nelchina caribou herd. Over a span of 38 years, our family has come to understand many of the herd's patterns of movement and prime feeding areas. The proposed Tangle Lakes Game Refuge is a prime feeding area. The caribou migrate here in the fall and often winter in the tangles. You'll have to be patient with me. I'm not a good speaker, but I've got a heart that knows what's right here. The lake system supports rich vegetation from all the important lichens to an extraordinary array of blueberries. Along with the caribou, bears, fox, swans, and ptarmigan are among the wildlife that feed on the rich blueberry patches. Yearly, the Rutledge family and many other Alaskans gather a winter supply of blueberries at the Tangle Lakes. Our hunting partner once called this area a breadbasket, as it provides so much food. Please consider this, and this is true. As our world's climate warms, food is going to become very important. So I just do not understand why we would possibly jeopardize the health of the new Nelchina caribou herd for short-term mining interests. And people are just one part of the equation, for there is the caribou herd itself. The caribou deserve this game refuge. This is their homeland. This is their right to thrive. If you have not visited the Tangle Lakes, I urge you to do so. Its beauty is beyond measure. You'll see a tangle of these beautiful lakes surrounded by lush tundra with the Alaska Range in the backdrop. It is a clean, wholesome environment, very rich in life. And I ask you to please support HB 272 and create a Tangle Lakes game refuge. And I'm going to do an ad here. Because we have hunted there so long, we have many Native people that we see and we talk to and, you know, are just a part of the community. And, I know the corporation is one thing, but my sense is if you were to talk to the Native people themselves, their feeling would be that they should be protected. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Rutledge? I see two. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Rutledge, if you know some of the other people in the region who feel passionately about this, although we can't accept your testimony on their behalf,
I've
not been designated in that. If you wanted to go out and collect their signatures and submit that, it'd be perfectly admissible.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Representative Drummond for Ms. Rutledge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Rutledge. So it sounds like your family has hunted in the area for a very long time, since you established your homestead in the 70s. So do you travel up to the Tangle Lakes area to hunt, or do you hunt the Nelchina caribou herd wherever it is permitted?
We do travel to the Tangles. It's one of the places, and I won't say, sometimes they're not in there in the fall, so then we go over to the Sitna side. You kind of need to be where they are. If we do not get them in the fall, or that we always know we can go back, we do. But, it is a very dynamic thing, where the herd goes. But, yes, we do. We have, but we also go in other places, too, if the herd is not there during hunting season.
And so the caribou,
One of the things that is so important is a winter site, and that is important to the caribou there. That is, they come in the fall, and they're around there, and then a lot of them stay in the winter, and it's not every year, that's for sure, but it is really a prime habitat place. It really is. And the blueberries, how could you jeopardize that? And the fact that we are in our world right now with this warming world and food, water tables going down, why aren't we not protecting this valuable resource?
And one more question, Ms. Rutledge.
How far is
the Tangle Lakes area, or the eastern edge from your home at Kenny Lake?
Okay, so we would be 80 miles. I would say 80 miles.
Okay, and
maybe a little further.
And follow up. And since you live in the area, and you, I'm sure, are well aware of the conflicts with the Otna region's land use, I know I'm vaguely aware of an issue that was settled recently. The corporation doesn't own every square mile of land in the area. Obviously, you are you're a private landowners. Your neighbors are private landowners. So the region's lands that are off limits to hunting are specifically signed that way. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. We're going to go now to Marliana Hall of the RDC, the Resource Development Council. Ms. Hall, give us your name and your affiliation, and we welcome your testimony.
Good evening, Chair, Co-Chair Josephson, and members of the House Resources Committee. My name is Marliana Hall. I am the Executive Director for the Resource Development Council for Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify again. I want to mention in brief that RDC is a statewide trade association comprised of individuals and companies from Alaska's oil and gas, mining, forest products, fisheries, and tourism industries, as well as the 12 land-owning Alaska Native corporations, many municipalities and boroughs, individuals and trade associations and labor unions as well. I am testifying today to express our opposition to House Bill 272, an act establishing the Tangle Lake State Game Refuge. It is the position of RDC to encourage the exploration and responsible development of Alaska's natural resources. Creating a new refuge will restrict or eliminate the potential opportunities in the Tangle Lakes area, including mineral development and tourism. Further, it will create new restrictions to land use at a time when our state faces fiscal and other challenges. Alaska already contains over 70% of the nation's national parklands, 84% of its national wildlife refuge lands, two of the nation's largest national forests, and the two largest state parks in the union, and a number of other state conservation units. RDC believes the Tangle Lakes area should continue to be managed for multiple use, where recreation, including hunting, subsistence, and other, as well as other potential uses, including mining, they can coexist, and they do elsewhere in our state. Instead of creating yet another refuge in Alaska, we must focus on ways to show that our state is open for business and that Alaskans are serious about growing our economy. The area proposed for refuge, for the refuge status, contains mining claims previously held by various companies and individuals. Mining has occurred there in the past, as well as ongoing exploration, as well as previous exploration activities. These activities have not had a significant adverse impact on wildlife, as it was, Alicia testified from the Miners Association already. I would remind you that Alaska has one of the most comprehensive regulatory and permitting systems in the United States for protecting the environment and our wildlife and our fish resources. Any project proposed for the region will be thoroughly scrutinized and well vetted through Alaska's extensive permitting process and NEPA. In closing, I urge members of House Resources to oppose HB 272. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. I don't see any questions. I do see a question. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Ms. Hall. How many people do you represent, and how many reside within the region?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, could you repeat the second part of the question, please?
How many people live in the Paxton area or the area region immediately around Tangle Lakes?
Did Representative Parrish, you first asked,
how many people do you represent, and how many live in around the Tangle Lakes?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, thank you for the question. The Resource Development Council has hundreds of corporate and individual members representing tens of thousands of Alaskans in all the resource and support industry sectors. The specific number of people in that particular Paxton area or Tangle Lakes area that we have in our membership is a number that I'd have to get back to you with. I can certainly do that and get an email to yourself as well as members of the House Resources Committee.
I would appreciate that. Thank you, Ms. Hall.
Ms. Hall, it's Andy Josephson, and one thing you said I want some clarification on, if you can help me. You said that you thought the refuge would be bad for tourism And I'm just wondering why you believe that is so.
Representative, or excuse me, Co-Chair Joseph Sim, thank you for that question. I think that what I said was it would create new restrictions to land use, and that would potentially impact the opportunities in the area, including tourism. Restricting or eliminating the potential use of the land through creating a refuge creates further uncertainties and additional regulatory and permitting processes that would impact anything from a green tourism operation to a mining claim.
Okay. I think what we'll do for the committee's sake is we will ask at a future hearing Mr. Meehan of the Department of Fish and Game to respond, because I think there's some information that counters that. Any questions for Ms. Hall? Yes, Representative Trump.
Thank you. Ms. Hall, I'm just wondering if you could just give us an update. When RDC takes a position on a particular piece of legislation, I know with some of the other organizations it has to go through a pretty formal process and all members have to approve. And I just am not familiar with what your process is. And why I'm interested in that is that, you know, under the RDC umbrella is supposedly tourism. And so I'm just wondering if those individuals had a voice in this position of opposition.
Through the chair, Coaster Parr, thank you for the question. I think, you know, explaining our internal process for reviewing legislative issues would take a little bit longer than I'd take your time for this evening. However, I would just bring to your attention that we have general policy positions that are vetted with my 78-member board of directors, usually in November, December of the year before the next legislative session. And we develop those. And as I mentioned, you know, early in my testimony, that it's a position of RDC to encourage the exploration and responsible development of Alaska's natural resources. And that would be the position that then comes from where we are, how we take our position on legislation like this. In addition, we were contacted by one of our members to make sure that we were aware of this bill and potentially develop a position on it, and that member was Atna.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
So, for example, if you're weighing positions, then all things are not equal to RDC. So, for example, it sounds like you prioritize mining interests over tourism interests, because in this case there would be sort of a conflict between those two interests, and like I say, under the RDC umbrella, you guys list that you know that tourism is one of the things that you look at, but I'm not hearing that represented in your testimony today.
Through the chair, Co-Chair Tarr, thank you for that question or statement. I would just clarify that absolutely we think that all of the resource industries in Alaska can coexist, including mining, tourism, fishing, oil and gas, and what's left of the forestry industry. I think it's important to point out that one isn't put above the other and that both can occur, and that I think, you know, the tourism industry as well as all the other industries rely on mines, minerals. Without them, you know, the technologies that we use, that I use right now to testify, the computer I'm using, wouldn't be possible. And, you know, the potential in the area, which is still fairly unknown, could provide resources not only for, you know, jobs in our economy here in Alaska, but resources that are imported from countries with less regulatory systems, and potentially provide better national security for not only Alaska but for our nation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just comment that for the 6 years that I've been in the legislature, I've always noticed that tourism was under the umbrella, but I've yet to hear RDC take a position that I would characterize as pro-tourism. I've only ever heard positions in support of extractive activities, and so I'm just curious about that. And I guess what I'm going to do is just follow up with the individual members of your board that I know are involved in the tourism industry, because I know, for example, some of those folks are very actively engaged in legislative efforts down here to increase tourism marketing, to make Alaska a destination, to increase the number of visitors that come here. We know long-term this is a sustainable industry that will far outlive any of the extractive industries that we have if done correctly. And I guess it's just a source of disappointment that I don't ever hear that represented in any of the comments or positions that your organization take. So I will do my additional follow-up and talk to those individual folks offline. Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Chair, may I respond?
Yes. Did you want to say something, Ms. Hall?
Yes. Through the Chair, Co-Chair Tarr, thank you. I would also just add that I'm happy to share with you our policy positions in regards to tourism. You know, that's an industry that we've long supported, and it's an industry that we're very involved with. And as a matter of fact, my legislative chair is a representative from the tourism industry.
Representative Birch, and then Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you, Ms. Hall, for your testimony this evening, and I would encourage you, and maybe you already do, but I would encourage you to invite our entire resource committee to attend the annual RDC program, wherein, as I recall, having participated in a number of them, that there is a extensive presentation on the tourism forecast, passenger employment, or aircraft employments, passenger employments on the tourist on the cruise ships, and everything else. So I don't know if that routinely happens, but I would certainly invite other members of the resources committee to participate in that, because it is a good program. Thank you.
It's a great program. I attend it regularly. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that I appreciate the RDC calling in and giving a balanced view on the bill, and so I just wanted to point that out and say thank you very much.
Okay. Now, Mr. Chair, I just have to say maybe Representative Birch wasn't there this year, because I actually spoke on a panel, and I think you might, or you, if you were there, maybe you'd remember.
I missed the panel.
Okay. All right, let's move on. The next caller is Bruce Rogers.
Hello.
Mr. Rogers, give us your name and any association or affiliation, and we'll welcome your testimony.
Okay, well, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Bruce Rogers, and no particular affiliation. So myself and my family, we've lived in the Gakona area for the last 17 years. We support HB 272, which would establish the Tangle Lakes State Game Refuge. We've used the area for hiking, hunting, and berry picking. The area proposed as a refuge is somewhat unique in Alaska, because a person can experience world-class scenery and hike across relatively easy terrain to get away from it all without spending big dollars on an air charter or expensive off-road vehicle. It's also unique because archaeological evidence suggests that people have been using the area for hunting for at least 10,000 years. And so, having supported caribou for at least that long, it's pretty obvious that the area provides critical habitat for the Nelchina herd. So we view HB 272 as a good strategy for maintaining critical habitat and maintaining hunting opportunities that have existed for thousands of years. So I reviewed DNR's Tanner Knob Basin Area Management Plan. Seems like the proposed refuge lies partially within subregion 5 of that planning area. And the proposed refuge seems consistent with the plan, which lists fish and wildlife and recreation as priorities for management. Mineral exploration and development opportunities could still be available on claims to the north of the proposed refuge. So I feel like mining development in the area would change the character of the area for a long, long time, and I think it would put additional pressure through habitat destruction or disturbance on the Nelchina caribou herd. And this is a herd that's a treasured resource to folks in the Copper Basin, Palmer-Wasilla area, Anchorage, and elsewhere. So this seems like a balanced proposal, and myself and my family support it, and we urge you to also support it. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Rogers? Yes. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Rogers, I note that you, along with the other two callers thus far, have been hunters in the region. Do most, or what proportion of your neighbors use that area for subsistence?
I would say probably 50% that I talk to, kind of like Linda mentioned, that, you know, it kind of depends on where the caribou are, but it's such an open area and easy to hunt, and 50 to 75% of the folks that I know go there when the caribou are there to hunt there.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on. Thank you, Mr. Rogers, to Mr. Donahue. And let me make one note. I have a note from Mr. King, and I hope it's okay to share, but just to clarify, the bill refers to the ability to continue to restake a claim, and it's. I'm going to remind the committee that that would be true if the claim didn't lapse, but I think that's always a true statement about claims, that they can't typically lapse. Is that right? Please. So, brief interlude in the testimony just to clarify, because I don't want to decline someone from hearing something that I was afforded in a note.
Thank you, Matt, Mr. Chairman. This, for the record, is Ed King, Special Assistant to the Commissioner of Natural Resources. Under 3805-265, that's the abandonment provision for mining claims. When a claim is abandoned, all rights are exhausted, and so they can't be rekindled under this bill after the effective date.
Let me ask you, Mr. King, the bill as written by LegLegal says that it accepts, E-X-C-E-P-T, it accepts for valid existing rights and interest in mineral claims existing on January 1, 2019. So the way I read that is, if you have a valid right and interest in mineral claim existing next New Year's Day, you can continue to work that claim and have access to that claim. Am I wrong about that reading?
Mr. Chairman, you are correct. If you have existing rights on that date, then those rights would continue. After that date, no new rights could be established.
Okay.
The existing rights being already exhausted, they would have to be claimed between, you know, now and before the effective date for them to take effect.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, the example that you gave with Pure Nickel,
yeah,
and restaking the claims, if the intent of that statement was to say that they could come back and restake those claims at a date after January 1st, that would be incorrect.
Okay. I understand. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I assume that this indicates that the administration supports this, you know, potential land grab for, Is this supported by the administration? I haven't seen a letter from the governor supporting this. Is this supported?
Through the chair, Representative Birch, the administration has not taken a position on this bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Drummond, and then we'll go on to Mr. Donahue in Kenny Lake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. King, I appreciate that you're here. I've called up the OTNA land status map at the corporation's website, where they invite people to get permits to use their lands. And I believe I have identified where this refuge boundaries are, and it shows only state lands or BLM lands. Are you familiar with the boundaries of the proposed refuge, and whether it's actually state land or whether it infringes on any OTNA region lands or selected lands?
Representative German, through the chair, to the best of my knowledge, all of the lands within the proposed refuge are state selected lands. There are no OTNA selected lands in that region.
Thank you, sir. That's what I thought.
I think
Mr.
we have
Chairman.
A question or comment from Representative Lincoln.
I just wanted to wade into the discussion around whether or not it's normal or expected to, you know, consult with regional ANC and their traditional areas or boundaries. It's like, it's not that, you know, the expectation, at least that I've familiar with and grew up with and in my region, is that, you know, those the regional boundaries are, you know, you're expected to kind of seek out consultation with regional ANCs that way beyond just the land that they happen to have acquired through ANCSA. You know, this committee heard a lot of testimony on the Pebble project, for example, and, you know, the regional ANC's position on that project, I think, was really valuable for the committee, and that regional ANC doesn't own the land that Pebble's on, for example. And so I think it's to Birch and Representative Johnson's comments earlier, I appreciated them, you know, advocating strongly to consult with, not you know, totally defer to them, but they're an important voice, and along with boroughs and, you know, tribes and municipalities.
Thank you. All right, let's go to Joe Donahue. Mr. Donahue, are you there?
I am here.
All right, give us your name, any association, affiliation kind of thing, and we wait for your testimony.
Okay, my name is Joe Donahue. I'm from Kenny Lake, Alaska, and I am currently on the board of Copper Country Alliance. So good evening, Congressman. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for this public testimony. I'm a rural Alaskan, and I think one of the things that sets Alaska apart from the rest of the U.S. and the rest of the world is access to truly wild places, whether it's for world-class hunts or just paddling and camping. And that's why I'm calling you tonight. That's why I support HB 272. This bill would reserve a world-class hunting ground for hunting specifically. Tangle Lakes is very important to the Nalchina herd, and it's where hundreds of hunters travel each year. Now, it's my understanding that there are no current hard rock mining claims in the proposed area, so it makes sense to reserve it for hunting and for other recreation. Also, I believe this bill would only bolster local tourism by protecting what tourists travel to see, the caribou and the beautiful landscape there. I'm lucky enough to have hunted and been berry picking in Tangle Lakes with my family, and I have great memories there. My wife has been going to Tangle Lakes since she was a child. She remembers canoeing around the lakes with her sisters, berry picking with her mom, and our first caribou hunt there with her dad. We had our first child in December, a baby girl, and I can't wait to be able to share this area with her as she gets a little older. We hope to do an autumn trip there every year, whether for berry picking, hunting, or just canoeing. So to sum up, I support this bill because it would allow hunting and other recreation in Tangle Lakes for generations to come. By protecting the land that the caribou rely on, we'll protect this area. Please do your part to protect this beautiful region for the rich experiences that it offers to all Alaskans in the future. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Mr. Donahue. Questions for this gentleman? Yes, Representative Birch.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I feel compelled to indicate that, you know, nothing's going to change if this doesn't pass. I think it's not like it's going to be fenced off and you won't have access. From what I understand, this proposal basically restricts the multiple shared use of this area. I think that, you know, my anticipation, would this fail, is that basically nothing's going to change. The full use and utility that generations have enjoyed will prevail. And I don't think I would despair over whether this proposal moves forward or not. I'm familiar with the area. I think it's I think the use and utility will be preserved for generations. Thank you, sir.
Okay, let's move to Kathy. We're approaching the end of the testimony. We do have two important. I'm doing them as I see them. Everyone's important, but we have officials with the OTNA that would like to testify, and I want to get to them, too. Kathy Teich.
Hello, my name is Kathy Teich. I live in Talkeetna, Alaska, in the Matsu Borough. And my significant other and I have been going bear hunting for 20 years. Actually, he's been hunting bear since 1971. Actually, probably most of his hunts he went with Charlie Rutledge, Linda testified earlier. I've been berry picking there for 20 years. And that resource, the resource of caribou, is really important. So many people depend on that meat for their winter food. Groceries are quite a bit higher, especially in the Copper River region. And if it were not for that resource of caribou meat, and moose meat for that matter, a lot of people would do without. And I do photography as well, and I go to that region to get pristine photos of places that are untouched. And like the former testifier said, Alaska is special. We are blessed to have these areas that other states do not have. And if a very large mine were to wreak havoc in the area, it would definitely change the area. I'm not against all mining. Small things, you know, that's okay. But I am against things that are massive, that would destroy a habitat that has been sustaining caribou for, you know, 10,000 years, a very sustainable resource. I know a lot of people here in Talkeetna and up in Chase, and for that matter down in Wasilla, Palmer, Eagle River, and even all down to Anchorage, who hunt that area every year, and because it's so accessible to urban populations, that herd has a lot of pressure. And with J-Bear expanding their area, I know that that has been a stressor to the herd. So I would really, really like it if you guys supported House Bill 272 to provide a refuge for those animals. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Teich. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Teich.
Yes.
The conceived refuge boundary would be around the Amphitheater Mountains. Is that where the caribou herd spend most of their time between Summit Lake over to McLaren River?
Ms. Teich, did you hear the question?
Asking me a question, or were you defining it?
I was asking you if how important is that region relative to the section just north of it, you know, around Eureka Creek and in that large valley? Where does the herd spend the preponderance of its
time? I mean, it's all dependent on the year. Caribou need a lot of territory. They range far and wide depending on the year. And, you know, you can't really put your finger on where they're going to be. But I do think that, I mean, they need a large area, and I think that whole region back in there, the one you talked about just now, as well as the part north of the Denali Highway there by Tango Lakes, I think all of that region is important for them.
Thank you, ma'am. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Teich. We're going to move on now to Felicia Rydell of Kenny Lake. Ms. Rydell?
Hello.
Your name and any association.
My name is Felicia Rydell. I'm representing myself. I'm just doing this on my own time to support HB 272. I've lived in Kenny Lake since 1977. Before that, we lived in Fairbanks, where my mom homesteaded in the 40s. I'm not a hunter, but my husband is, and we rely on game meat, fish, and garden. I love to go where hunters go because they go to the good places. like Tangle Lakes. I gather berries and photographs when I'm there. I used to herd our kids. Four of five are now hunters. I love to camp in away spaces and have enjoyed all this and unique geology of the Tangle Lake area. As to the concern about mineral resources, I get it. We had a mining claim and my husband had a dredge. In the long run, what will pay off the most is the hunting, the fishing, the berry picking and tourism. Because when the minerals are used up in big mines, the jobs are gone. And then you just have a mess left. Sustainable resources like harvesting or tourism can last forever if we plan for that. Mines close. I've been way up in the Wrangell Mountains and thought, I'm the first person up here, and walked a little farther and found a mine shaft. So they miners not only went there, but they hauled those wood up to make the shaft, and those mines are abandoned, or have, being from Fairbanks, have seen the abandoned dredges there. I emailed the names of the legislators I had that were interested in this about how this summer I want to use a book called Rock Ridges and Glaciers that has a mile-by-mile geologic description of the Denali Highway. It's just something I love and have wanted to do. But I think a lot of people are like that, and they could enjoy that sort of thing forever, all the while contributing to the local economy, which is another big sustainable resource, and it meshes with the local lifestyle here. I'd have to say that it's getting harder and harder to get game, and it is something that we rely on. So please support HB 272 for the Tangle Lake Game Refuge. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Riddell. I don't see any questions. We have two more callers. I'm going to go first to Catherine Martin, affiliated with Otna, Inc. Catherine, are you there?
No, it is. Okay. Yes, thank you. This is Catherine Martin with Otna Incorporated. I'm Senior Vice President, and just wanted to put on record that Otna, Inc. would like to express our opposition to House Bill 272 that proposes to create a state refuge in the Tangle Lakes area. We are very concerned about the Alaska economy and feel that yet another new refuge in our state would be detrimental to the economic development opportunities in the Otna region and the overall state of Alaska. It will restrict land use, will prevent mineral development, hinder tourism, and interfere with our customary and traditional hunting practices. While the bill sponsor and supporters have good intentions, our experience has shown that this type of legislation only serves to further restrict land use and resource development, so essential to our healthy society. Alaska has so little land that is not currently locked up in parks, preserves, and critical habitat. We need to be very cognizant of the need to maintain the small multiple-use areas remaining in the state. In addition, this type of restriction would hinder the formation of a borough, as it takes a significant land base out of the borough land selection pool. And just to add with some of the comments that were made earlier, this area is part of Otna's traditional territory. At one time, our territory covered 23 million acres. When ANSCA passed, we were only given 1.7 million acres of this land. And so this area has historical and cultural significance to the Otna people. There's at least four villages in our region that depend on this area for subsistence purposes. And with that, just to clarify, too, that PAX in the junction there is 72 miles from the Glen Allen Junction. So Kenny Lake's about another 40 miles south of that, so they're quite a ways from there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Martin, this is Andy Josephson. Just a couple questions. Why do you think that customary and traditional hunting practices would change under a refuge?
I don't think it would change. I think it would be more restricted. We already have felt the impacts of Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. We know this is a federal park, and the same with Denali National Park. And even north of us is the Tetlin Wildlife Refuge. That's north of our region, but our people used to use that area too. But it restricts all the restrictions now that are in place because of these units, whether they be parks, refuge, critical habitat areas, has restricted use. It not so much changes it, but it restricts the use that we can utilize the area.
All right. And are you aware that this is a letter from the president, Ms. Anderson, who I see on the phone, expresses concern about creating a state park. Are you aware that this is not a state park? It's a game
refuge. Yes, we are aware of that.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Martin? All right. I don't see any, so we'll go to Michelle Anderson. Ms. Anderson, we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And thank you to the committee and to the folks that have testified as well. It's been educational, I guess, to hear what others are thinking. So my comments are less scripted than the ones that I've heard. I just want to speak in opposition to this bill. I feel like there has been no public process, no community meetings. Someone somewhere, well, I guess we know who the someone is, has decided that it's in our best interest as a state to make the area that we're talking about a state's refuge. And truth be told, we've been trying to look through state regulations, and maybe you can help me with this, to find an exact definition of a state refuge. It's not easy to find. So I'll just share that with you. This area that we're talking about is of huge importance and historical value to the Otna people. And that's not me saying that here in 2018. That's scientists who are validating what our elders have always told us. We may not own those lands, but I can tell you that we have stories about those lands. In fact, my own clan, the Ujishu or Caribou clan, we used to own Paxson Lake. We could probably tell you hours worth of stories about the history behind that area and how we've used it. I can appreciate what Ruth McHenry and others have said about trying to protect subsistence for future uses, but our experience has been, just as Catherine mentioned, you know, when you say state park, refuge, national park, all I feel coming on is another huge volume of rules and regulations that we will have to read and memorize in order to be able to use those lands. So I'm not too keen on that idea. We have a mandate. All Alaska Native regional corporations have a mandate from Congress to develop and use our lands for the economic benefit of our shareholders. I feel like the area that we're talking about right now is close enough to land that we actually have been given title to that we have concerns. And I would appreciate a thorough vetting of this concept before anything substantive is done. I mean, it would be a travesty, I think, that any sort of law is established without talking to the people that it's going to affect.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Just for the record, you're the president of Otna, Inc., is that right?
I am the president.
Yep.
I'm also a tribal member of Volcana.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Ms. Anderson. How many how many shareholders do you represent, and how many live in the region or interact with the proposed refuge?
I currently represent 2,025 shareholders. That number changes every quarter. That does not take into account tribal members who are not shareholders. So that number could easily be much higher. I didn't come prepared to answer a numbers question about our tribal role, so I can certainly get that for you. Just speaking purely for unincorporated, for our corporate shareholders, we crossed a threshold last year And I mean that we had more than half of our shareholders living in outside of the region, people traveling out for obvious reasons. Other hubs in the states are experiencing the same thing that we are seeing here in, you know, in this area, and that's out-migration.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Anderson? Yes, Representative Tarr.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Appreciate your testimony. I guess I just want to understand a little bit about your comments related to the process and feeling like there need to be public meetings. I mean, the process that we're using here in the legislature is how we consider all pieces of legislation where there's, you know, public testimony, consideration, members have the ability to do amendments. So nothing about that process is unusual. And so I'm just trying to understand if you know, are thinking that the legislative process is different than it is, because we don't really go out and have community meetings on things. You know, we're here in Juneau. But also, I guess, just trying to understand, because in our packet we have a a letter signed by 823 individuals and businesses in support of this from all over the state, and I know that that was collected a number of years ago because this has been an active issue. And then we also have a 2008 letter where the Board of Game talks about the discussion at their meeting and the interest in forming a Tangle Lakes game refuge at that time. And they close the letter by saying, "We recognize the potential for mineral extraction in this area and in associated mineral leases, but remain convinced the long-term value of maintaining wildlife habitat far outweighs the potential benefits of possible development projects known at this time." And so it's just, from what I understand, and then I have another, even prior to that, 2002 memo from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game during the Murkowski administration. So, you know, I guess I have evidence here going back, 2016 years at least, that this has been discussed. So it's just hard for me to understand how this would be like a new concept for you, or how it is that if you're in the region, president of your corporation, that you wouldn't have been aware of any of these prior conversations or the citizen involvement around this issue. So if you could just help me understand, you know, is this news to you? You weren't aware of any of this activity going back the last 16 years?
This is new to me. I'm sorry if that surprises you, but it is. It's new to me. And I'm sorry, I'm not even certain who just said that. It was hard to hear your name when you started out.
Ms. Anderson, it was Representative Tarr.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Anderson, I do have one question for you. I'm told, and I saw this, I think, in my office, that just over 10 years ago, Otna Inc. supported this conceptually. That is, it supported the creation of a refuge. Am I right about that?
That was a past administration of Obama many years ago, and the circumstances were different. The conversation was different. It was a Board of Game decision that the prior president was weighing in on, and the Tangle Lakes refuge concept was a part of that dialogue.
Okay.
So I think given what he was dealing with at the time, he felt the position he was taking to support the establishment of a refuge was in our best interest at that time.
Okay. We have a question from Vice Chair Lincoln, Representative Lincoln.
Hi, Ms. Anderson. I'm just curious if you could describe the efforts in forming a borough. I think there was reference in your letter that there was some, you know, possible land selection associated with the borough formation.
Ms. Anderson, did you hear that question?
Yes, I did. Well, there has been a great deal of conversation about borough formation, and I think it's just natural that, you know, there would be concern that you would tie up any land out there or put land into restricted status when it could be part of the borough and used for a different purpose. So I guess that's my best answer, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. At this time, we are through the testimony. I appreciate everyone's patience and going as long as we've gone. I would ask, I'm going to close the, is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on 272? Seeing none, I'm going to close the testimony. And we're going to move to another bill, which I'm confident, not positive, but confident we can process relatively quickly. I would ask that amendments to 272, that is the bill we just heard, be turned in by Friday at 5. They should be emailed to my staff, Tom Atkinson, or to the House Resources email account. I'm going to turn the 330 meeting, that is the House Bill 330 meeting, over to my co-chair. And Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Where we are with House Bill 330 is consideration of amendments. And so members should have the amendments on their table. It should just be amendments number 3 and 4. Not, there's no 1 and 2. So these are just amendments number 3 and 4. Is that right? Okay. Okay. 1 and 2, amendments number 1 and 2, I've just been told, have been posted. And so if the individuals who submitted those amendments are not going to offer them, then it would be helpful to officially just state that those amendments are not going to be offered. And I don't have in my mind who those belong to. Representative Burt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding, I do not intend to offer amendment number 1, and it's my understanding amendment number 2 would not be offered as well. But I do intend to offer up amendment number 3.
Excellent. Okay, so that brings us to where we are. Everybody hopefully has their copies. I'm looking. It looks like everyone does. So, Representative Birch.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I do move amendment number 3, if I haven't. No objection?
I'll object for discussion.
I was just too good to be true. hope springs eternal. This amendment strictly limits the access of confidential information shared under the protective order to those directly involved in conducting or managing an audit or appeal, to those who will testify or provide sworn evidence, and to those whose approval is necessary to settle or resolve an audit or appeal. DNR staff has suggested that this is already accomplished under the current bill language or have suggested a broader scope of access. However, I'd like to insert clarifying language, which is essentially a language contained within a protective order issued by the court. Having this language in statute will provide further assurance that confidential information is protected. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Are there any questions? And Mr. King, could you please join us? What folks will see, and just for anybody watching or listening, is that amendment number 3 and amendment number 4 address an issue that was brought to our attention by AOGA in their testimony last week. And there's sort of a couple different ways we could approach this. And so basically the amendments you'll see are two options. And so would you, Mr. King, comment on amendment number 3? And that may, you know, you may need to refer a bit to amendment number 4, I understand, but, you know, let's try and focus on amendment number 3 and any concerns you have with that or comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Ed King, Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, we appreciated the testimony, the concerns that AOGA raised, and we are not objecting to the idea that some sideboards or limitations be placed on the protective orders. That is the intent of the protective orders, that they are limited. The bill as it's written now provides that they are limited. We understand that the industry wanted a little bit more clarity written into the statute. We just feel like if that clarity is to be written in the statute, that it should parallel existing statute. So the statute under the Department of Revenue, AS 4355040, and that's I believe it's, I can't remember the rest of the statute there, but the language that's within that statute that accomplishes the same goal and provides that clarifying and restrictive language for dealing with tax issues and the disclosure of confidential data, because that's exactly the same thing that we're doing in here. We just suggest that we use a parallel construction, which is what amendment 4 is intending to do.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. King or questions for the amendment sponsor?
And just for the record, Madam Co-Chair, I think Amendment 4 is marked as D.5, David.5. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. So the amendment we're considering right now, Amendment number 3 is D.3, and then Amendment number 4 is D.5 that Mr. King just referred to. Thank you.
Yes, I do.
Yes, Representative Josephson and then Parrish.
Through the chair for Mr. King, the language, I know we have Amendment 3 before us, but the Amendment 4, is that the language that is in a Title 43 that you just, that you, does it mirror Title 43?
Mr. Co-Chair, yes. The language that's in Amendment 4 mirrors almost verbatim the language that's in the Title 43 under the what is effectively a protective order for the Department of Revenue. The first phrase or the first major portion of the amendment is exact language, and then it's tailored to specifically to royalties in the context of DNR.
Okay, follow up.
Mr.
King, I went back and watched the Judiciary Committee's proceedings on this, and Mr. Hurley of ConocoPhillips expressed concern that if the protective orders weren't designed right, that the royalty audits may not be done swiftly, and that a company like Conoco could suffer because if they underpaid, they would pay an 11% royalty interest rate.
Mr. Chairman, that is exactly why we're here with the bill. House Bill 330 is because of the fact that there is no process for protecting information that's disclosed under our current statutes. That's statute AS 3805-036F, which gives us the authority to disclose confidential data during a royalty audit. So the bill that's before us does not give us the ability to disclose that information, but because our authority is not expressed, the process is not expressed within the language, when we run into a situation where we can't agree to terms for the release of that confidential data, it becomes very difficult for us to complete that audit. And so those audits, we have 7 of them now on the commissioner's desk that are pending and cannot be resolved because we can't come to terms on how to disclose that data. And while it's pending on the commissioner's desk, you are correct that it's incurring 11% interest.
And just for the committee, Madam Co-Chair, if I might, I want to be clear that Mr. Hurley did not express for ConocoPhillips 100% unabashed approval for the bill, but he did speak to the concern I raised. Is that am I summarizing his testimony fairly?
I'll choose not to respond to that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a question actually for Representative Birch. Representative Birch, we've heard from Mr. King about the advantages of Amendment 4 over Amendment 3. I find them fairly compelling, but I'd like you to speak to the ways in which Amendment 3 is superior to 4.
I'd prefer the tighter language that's represented in Amendment 3 as it relates to confidential information. I think we have a duty and responsibility to assure that we are protecting private information as in the discourse or the conduct of our business and audits and related businesses. And I'm confident that this is a better approach.
Any follow-up, Representative Parrish?
No, I do appreciate it.
Mr. King, I wanted to ask a question because one of the conversations that I had in terms of, you know, trying to understand how to address this and what brought me to working with you all to offer, if we get there, Amendment number 4, was in some circumstances this language was almost so restrictive that you wouldn't be able to resolve these issues, as I understood it. And I want to make sure if I'm understanding it incorrectly, you correct me, but if that's the case, if you could just expand on that bit a little bit to give the context.
Madam Co-Chair, the circumstances of every company are unique, and so the structure of the companies are also unique, and our ability to tailor a protective order to meet the unique circumstances of the company's needs, it requires us to have that flexibility to be able to tailor. We don't have one model boilerplate protective order. We have to tailor that protective order to the company. So our concern as we were trying to address the concerns that were raised by the OLGA is we didn't want to have any language that was so restrictive that there was even a hypothetical situation where a protective order could not be issued. And in the language that's offered in Amendment 3, Specifically, the way that it's constructed, there are four requirements that are necessary in order to issue a protective order without the approval of the company. And if there is a company whose corporate structure is such that there is, you know, one section that's dealing with audits and another section that has to have approval of those audits, it might be the case that there is not an officer who is also the one that can provide approval. And so, at least in the hypothetical, there could be situations where a protective order could not be issued under Amendment 3. And for that reason, we think the construction under Amendment 4 is superior.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. King? Okay. If you just want to hang tight, because if we move on to the next one. Representative Birch, do you have any wrap-up comments?
Well, I think it's a good amendment. It speaks to the concerns that exist with the proposal, and urge a yes vote.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to maintain my objection, so could we please call the roll?
No.
Representative Drummond?
I don't know yet. Come back to me, please.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Birch?
Yes.
Representative Johnson is not here. I'm back to Representative Drummond.
Can I wait until after the chair's vote?
No. Sorry.
I'll just have to say no.
No. Representative Co-Chair Josephson?
No.
And Co-Chair Tarr?
No. Okay. So by a vote of 1 yay and 5 nays, Amendment number 3 has not been adopted. That brings us to Amendment number 4. I move Amendment number 4.
I'll object just for purposes of discussion, although we've discussed it. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Again, I had gone back and forth with this, speaking back to the amendment we just didn't adopt, Representative Birch, and what led me to this was the conversation I just tried to bring up, that we wouldn't want something to be so restrictive that it actually couldn't accomplish the whole reason we're doing the bill in the first place. And, I've been assured, and I guess, Mr. King, if you could say, you know, you have a very high level of certainty that this language is restrictive enough that only the right people will see and have access to this information, but not so restrictive that it should prevent us from being able to resolve any of this unresolved audits.
Madam Chair, I can say that equivocally. The language in the amendment explicitly states that the uses are only for members of the party, and they can only be used for the purposes in connection with the royalty or net profit audit or appeal, and that the information is limited to matters related to that royalty or net profit share audit. Those express terms provide or should provide enough clarity to appease the concerns that were raised by AOGA. And again, we believe that even without this amendment, the intent of this bill is not to disclose information to anyone for any purpose other than that we're seeking that this bill for, and so we're happy with this amendment. We're happy to provide it, even though we don't think that it's necessary to try to appease those concerns. And I do believe that it does.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. King on Amendment number 4? Okay, I just want to say on the record that this issue being brought to our attention, I appreciate, so we can move forward and try to come up with a solution. And I hope. This is something that the department will keep in touch with us about, and I hope AOGA, I'm sure, will as well. Having worked with them before on trying to insert confidentiality language for seeing privileged tax information, I know they want to be as careful as possible, and I can really appreciate why. In this circumstance, you know, it's the department for these audits, so that makes me feel more comfortable. And the circumstance I was working on prior to this was legislators trying to see some of that more for educational purpose and developing tax policy. But we didn't get there because it's such a sensitive issue. So it is important to me that we get this right. And for all parties involved, I hope if somehow this does not work as it's going forward, it'll be brought to our attention and we'll be able to take quick action like we are today to resolve that and improve it. And so I just want that to be out there, that would be my intention. But again, not wanting to be so restrictive that it doesn't accomplish what it was set out to do is what led me to offer this today. Is your objection maintained?
No, I'd like to withdraw it.
Is there a further objection to Amendment Number 4? Okay, then Amendment Number 4 has been adopted. That brings the bill back before us. Any comments or points of discussion for House Bill 330? Perhaps the late hour, or hopefully just everybody thinks it's a good bill. If there are no further comments about House Bill 330, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Co-Chair, I move that we advance out of the Resources Committee, the committee substitute for House Bill Number 330, Judiciary, as just amended. It is version 30-GH2820/D with accompanying committee comments and fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, House Bill 330 will move from committee. If we could please ask members to stick around to quickly sign the paperwork. And then just as a review, we're kind of in catch-up mode because of our schedule kind of running over and getting caught up on floor work. So on Friday, we are hoping to be able to catch up on bills that have been delayed. That includes House Bill 260 from Representative Sadler, as well as there are two other new bills up on Friday. So it's going to be a very busy day, and we'll do our best to accommodate that. And pardon me. Thank you so much to everyone for doing the evening meeting and staying so late that so we could try to get caught up on our work. Have a great evening. We are